He's the opinionated Ottawa icon.
The Rob Snow Show returns
on Rogers TV and City News.
101.1 FM and 1310 AM.
What should be done to cool the red-hot housing market? The economics team at the Bank of Montreal has some ideas. It's all in a new report. One of the authors joins us now, Robert Kavcik, Senior Economist, Director, Economics at BMO. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thanks for having me on.
It's a great pleasure. The recent report released from BMO says policy makers, so the government, needs to act immediately in some form. Why do you say that, first of all? Why is action needed immediately? What is the risk here?
Well, the risk is that that house prices run well ahead of what is sustainable by underlying fundamentals in the economy and the job market and, you know, with respect to incomes and interest rates. And the reality is that this isn't a risk of something happening down the road. We've been seeing it since the fall, and it's got to the point where home prices are running at probably about 40% annualized rate right now across some of the big cities and even some of the rural markets. And it's not isolated like it was in 2016, 2017. This is very widespread across most markets. And I mean, you're feeling it there in Ottawa as well, I'm sure.
Right, right. It's not a Toronto, Vancouver thing anymore. It's a Canada thing, right?
This is very much Canada-wide, and it's not an urban thing anymore either. This is spread well into rural markets, recreational property, cottage country. It's almost across the board.
What role does market psychology play?
Well, the concern is that it's playing the biggest role right now. And one of the reasons we've called for some action on this is that, for a long time we've been arguing that home prices were rising because they should be rising, even though a lot of commentators out there were calling it a bubble or whatever the case may be for about a decade or so. The point where we're at now, though, is that it seems, and we can see confirmation in survey data, and we can see anecdotal evidence that there's more speculative activity, but it seems like what was a fundamentally very strong demand-driven housing market through the half of 2020 has started to feed on itself a little bit. And the reason that home prices have accelerated to the extent they have is simply because there's an increasing fear of missing out. There's a widespread perception that home prices are going to rise further. And with the Bank of Canada sitting on record low interest rates and promising that they're going to stay there, I think the expectations are getting further and further reinforced that prices can only go higher. And that in itself is what's driving this latest wave of price increases. And that's something that's not sustainable.
It's also creating a wealth effect, isn't it? It reminds me, it's very reminiscent. I was doing a nightly business show back in 99-2000. NASDAQ 5000, .com, Nortel, JDS, Uniphase, the whole thing, euphoria, irrational exuberance, and a great wealth effect. People felt wealthy. They would look at their investment accounts. How could you not feel wealthy? I think is it not fair to say the same thing is kind of happening today? I'm wealthy because of the price of my house, the equity in my house, the appreciation and the value of my house?
I'm sure it is. We're seeing it in consumer confidence surveys that we have seen confidence rebound very strongly, and big component of that has been what's happened with asset prices. The flip side of it is that central banks have been a little bit more in tune to the equality gap in the economy, like specifically in the labor market, because one of the features of the pandemic, of course, was the lower end of the pay scale got hit a lot harder. So one of the reasons that, conceivably they're sitting on low rates for such a long period of time is to bring the low end of the labor market back up. The flip side is they're actually just driving a bigger wedge in the wealth gap because they're blowing up asset prices at the same time. So it's a bit of a trade-off from that perspective.
Okay, so let's go through some of the potential measures and their possible effect. First of all, you outline the Bank of Canada could say, the era of ultra-low interest rates is over and we're going to move into a cycle of tightening. What do you think about that?
If they believe that what we're seeing in the housing market is in fact an issue, that's the single most effective thing that we could see policymakers do. is back off from ultra low interest rates and change the guidance and change the psychology out there that rates are going to stay low for 2, 3, 4 years. I understand that monetary policy is kind of hamstrung by what's happening in the economy and the job market, but the reality is that fiscal policy has stepped in like we've never seen before, and you know in theory is probably doing some of the work that monetary policy would have done in the past. So maybe just you know the unique nature of this cycle and the fiscal policy response that we've seen, maybe monetary policy doesn't have to act as it has in the past. Maybe there's some scope there to pull back on monetary stimulus just with an eye on what's happening in asset prices. I mean, that's technically not the Bank of Canada's mandate, so we're not expecting that to happen. But that is certainly the single most effective thing that can be done to cool house prices.
Okay. What about the bidding process?
So if we look at, you know, what's happening across a lot of the markets where we're seeing 5, 10, 15 offers come in on properties, the fact that the bidding process is blind, I would suspect is driving up the prices even more than they otherwise would be. Just simply because, I mean, if you're putting a bid on a property and you don't know what the other numbers are out there, rather than an auction style where you're incrementally increasing the bid until you hit your price, and you get much better price discovery that way in the market, you're throwing numbers on blind. And anecdotally, I mean, we've seen cases where individuals have paid $300,000, not above list price, but above the second ranked bid in the offer process. So it does take a very tight market and exaggerate it. So I think that's certainly something that we can address, but that's something that takes a while and it's not going to obviously be implemented overnight.
Okay. Let's talk about the sacred cow, capital gains on primary residences. What do you think?
So we mentioned this in our report, mainly to discredit the policy. I don't think politically it's going to happen, first of all. And I don't think it's really a policy lever that's actually going to do too much. First of all, it's very complicated. I mean, if we're going to start taxing capital gains on principal residences on the back end, then in theory, we have to probably open the door to things like interest deductibility and capitalizing renovations into the cost base of the property, right? So it's a very complicated change in policy. And then the other question is, I mean, does it really do anything? If you're a first-time buyer or a trade-up buyer looking to shift into a property with an eye on living it for a long period of time or using it for a long period of time, a change in capital gains treatment 10, 15, 20 years down the road probably isn't going to impact your decision all that much today. So I think it's a very complicated and very messy policy change that might ultimately not do a whole lot in the near term.
How about building more houses? if it is supply and demand, and there's a lot of demand and not enough supply, then create more supply.
Yeah, so the funny thing is that as much as we hear about this lack of supply, reality is if you look at the rate at which new listings are coming to the market, they're actually coming to the market across Canada 10 or 15% more quickly than they were in pre-COVID normal conditions. So there are listings, they're just getting completely vaporized by demand right now. So the balance is tilted that way. But in terms of new building, I mean, this is not a new issue. And frankly, we've been pointing to things like development restrictions and hurdles to bring projects to start and to completion, like on the regulatory side, for probably like 10 or 15 years. In Ontario, around the GTA, for example, this goes back to, you know, the Places to Grow Act back in like 2006, where we've almost by design created a lack of single attached housing in certain parts of Ontario. So for sure, like anything that can make the supply of housing more elastic or more responsive would help.
Okay.
But it's not gonna help today or in the next 6 months where this house price issue is starting to run off the rails a little bit.
What about more strict lending requirements, stricter stress tests on borrowers?
So this is a tool we've used in various forms again, going back probably 10 years already now, and the latest example was OSFI tightening up through the 2017-2018 period on the uninsured mortgage space, and it was effective. I think the issue now, though, is that, you know, because we've already tightened mortgage rules so consistently over such a long period of time, the mortgage market itself is actually it's actually quite solid. And so, as an example, if you walk into the bank today, you might be paying 1.7 or 2% on a 5-year fixed rate mortgage, but because of all the past mortgage tightening we've done in this country, you're qualifying at 4.79% today, I believe. So there's already a big buffer in there that is more or less insulated us from interest rate shocks and helped insulate the banking system. So I mean, tweaking around the edges of those changes that are already in place. Again, I don't think it's strong enough to actually change the psychology in the market today. People are still going to expect higher prices, and they're still going to, you know, go in and spend what they can in anticipation of prices rising.
If one of the big problems is affordability, should government do more to help, say, first-time homebuyers, for example, buy homes?
I don't think so.
Okay.
I think effectively what tends to happen in cases like that. So say, as an example, when Ottawa recently brought out, you know, their equity sharing program, or in the past they've opened up access to RRSPs, or if you go back to the 1990s, early 2000s, when they started to tweak amortization periods from, you know, 25 years to 30 to 35 to 40 to make it quote unquote more affordable. Effectively, what tends to happen at the end of the day is that affordability gets built into the prices and effectively just drives prices up even more. So it ends up washing itself out. So any kind of measures that improve affordability, quote unquote, just end up stoking demand. And that ends up just pushing prices up higher to the point where it scrubs out the actual policy change.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you for explaining some of the options available to policymakers. Great pleasure to speak to you this morning.
Okay, great. Thanks for having me.
That's Robert Kavcik, Senior Economist Director, BMO Economics. Be right back. Back into the talk about lockdowns, shutdowns, gray zones, paid sick days with the head of the Ontario Nurses Association on the Rob Snow Show on City News.
Strong voice.
Strong opinions.
The Rob Snow Show returns on Rogers TV and City News.
101.1 FM and 1310 AM.
Lockdowns, shutdowns, gray zones, stay-at-home orders. Let's get into all of it. Paid sick days, too. Doris Grinsabon is here, CEO, Registered Nurses Association of Ontario. Good morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah.
How are you,
good.
Rob?
How are you?
Yeah. I will be better when I don't need to do all these interviews to convince my premier to do a complete lockdown of this province with no movement from region to region. I will be a lot better because we have 510 people in ICUs today. Young people fighting for their lives, Rob.
Okay. So you want a full lockdown? Full lockdown,
complete lockdown, restricting travel between regions in Ontario, between provinces, and in fact between Canada and other countries, because we are inviting the P1 virus, not the UK one that is already here and awful, the Brazilian one that doesn't respond well to the vaccine. We are inviting it.
Okay. Describe maybe, Doris Grinsabon, for somebody who may not know. I mean, we hear about this record number of people in ICUs. What is it like to treat somebody in intensive care?
Well, just picture anyone in your family that is very young, whether it's an essential worker or someone that finished university, starting a life, fighting for their life in an ICU. That's what we are seeing today. Fighting for their lives in an ICU. People that were completely well before. Maybe even going to a mall, as they were in the weekend jam-packed. It is a disaster. People do not understand, Rob, what's going on. People are clueless. Those that go to the malls are clueless what's going on until it touches someone close to them. And we are at a breaking point. Health professionals see that every single day in ICUs. They cannot handle it physically or emotionally, but this is about the people. This is about the people that may not live or may struggle for years to come, not about our health professionals that are struggling with it. It's about the people fighting for a breath.
So full lockdown, shopping malls closed, businesses closed, restaurants closed, you know, stay at home. And if you, and I'm assuming that if you go outside, you know, you're going to get a fine or you're going to get a ticket or something like that.
Well,
that's what you want, right?
Well, that's happened in other countries where the situation is dire. We are out of control. The virus is out of control. The virus doesn't take a break. The virus' job is to find the person to hook on. That's how viruses spread. That's their job. They're not even trying to kill people, the viruses. They need to find how to spread, and they will. The virus will find it. Okay. So it's our choice. If we want more and more people suffering, the health system breaking down because it's already, so people with other conditions like cancer, heart attacks, etc., people with COVID that may not get in because we will not have any more where to put them in.
Yeah. This is. I mean, we're still paying the price for the first wave when it comes to that. Just at the Ottawa Hospital, I had the CEO of the Ottawa Hospital on the show a couple of weeks ago. They're behind by 15,000 procedures just at the Ottawa Hospital.
We are going to have a summer from hell. I don't like to use those words, but we will have a summer from hell if we don't put full brakes now, Rob. It's all I can tell you. We will not have a day in the summer. It will be beautiful outside even more than now, and then we will need to be in complete lockdown because we didn't do it before. And we will regret it because we will get to 4,000, 5,000 new cases a day. We will get to ICUs that will turn people away. Listen, this has happened in other countries. It's not that we don't know.
Yeah.
We know what we need to do.
So you're saying it's inevitable. Right? It's inevitable.
Well, no,
if we don't do it now, we're going to be doing it later anyway.
It's inevitable if people continue not to listen and the premier continues to think people will do what they want, what they need to do. People are not doing what they need to do. You saw the weekend.
Okay. You're also banging the drum on paid sick days. Your organization has been on that from the earliest days
of listeners, this. If your listeners, any of them, first of all, minimum wage in the warehouses and does not have the day to go and get the vaccine in whichever lineup, bring the vaccines to them. Hopefully the premier will announce this afternoon. We have been asking, bring the vaccines to them. We have 7,500 home care nurses, Rob, that can also bring vaccine to homebound patients. They see them every day because they go to do wound care, to do IV treatment. They could have the vaccines in their backpack and give them the vaccine. That's not happening. Teachers. We had a teacher in the weekend, 48-year-old teacher intubated in an ICU. That's not normal. A person perfectly good before she got COVID. What are we doing to ourselves? So if people are not willing to behave, and that means all of us, then the premier needs to put the brakes regardless of the politics of it.
Okay. Thank you, Doris Grinspun.
Thank you.
Yeah. CEO, Registered Nurses Association of Ontario. Now, just on vaccines and this idea, we're going to bring the vaccines to people where they work. John Tory was on Breakfast Television. That's our corporate cousins in Toronto, the great Breakfast Television show out of Toronto. And he said they're looking into it at the municipal level.
Well, we're hard at work on this now. And, you know, either Chief Pegg or Dr. Davila can talk to you. But I can just say to you that when we talk about a retooling, maybe it's a way to sort of take us to the next phase and to making sure that we use even more resources to get even more people vaccinated. And that involves some of what I referred to earlier. It involves going out wherever we can to workplaces that are at higher risk and vaccinating on the spot so that then it's much easier for people to get vaccinated in a place where they're much more likely to contract the virus. It involves what we're already doing, going to neighborhoods, but in increased numbers, in neighborhoods where there is an increased area or element of risk involved with regard to the vaccines.
Okay. So that was John Tory on Breakfast breakfast television this morning. We're going to get into schools. You have the schools in Peel are closed by order of the medical officer of health there. Schools open today in Ottawa, and a defense of that decision from our own medical officer of health, Dr. Vera Etches, on my program this morning. Merritt Stiles, we kind of get some political reaction to all of this. She's the New Democrat MPP for Davenport. She is the education critic for the official opposition at Queen's Park. So she's going to join us right after the 11:30 news. And the Prime Minister is doing his 11:30 thing, too. We'll listen to some of that. On the Rob Snow Show, City News.
The world is changing.
So keep up with Rob.
The Rob Snow Show returns on Rogers TV and City News. 101.1 FM and 1310 AM.
COVID in the schools. COVID in the schools. Ottawa schools open. Peel schools closed. Merritt Stiles is the NDP MPP for Davenport. She's the opposition education critic, the official opposition's education critic, and joins me this morning here on City News. Good morning.
Good morning.
Yeah, nice to talk to you. What did you think of the decision by the medical officer of health in Peel to close the schools there for 2 weeks?
Well, I mean, you know, every region is going to be different. Some medical officers of health are certainly looking at their region and making some tough calls. I think what's noticeably absent in all of this is leadership from the province. And I think once again, you know, we see regions, we see cities having to pivot, and communities and families having to pivot on short notice, with little consideration being given from on the provincial side to what their realities are. And I'm worried. I'm worried about our schools and our kids, because, you know, this has been a rough year already, and here we are again.
Yeah, shouldn't parents? You know, the Peel School Board, you know, the district school board there in Peel, big public board, big school board, Merritt. I mean, you know, like 150,000 students, 15,000 staff. Doesn't everybody deserve more than a day's notice? I mean, less than 24 hours notice if you're... How are parents supposed to make plans with less than 24 hours notice?
And I think what we've seen happening now is we've seen this government, you know, last week we were in the legislature. I was asking... Just on Thursday morning, I was saying to the Minister of Education, you know, you got to make a call. What are you going to do? People have a right to know. We're heading into a long weekend. Things are not looking good in some areas of the province, that's for sure. And people need to know. They're worried. And in fact, we had directors of education in some parts of the province warning people that they were likely going to get closed down next week in areas where they didn't end up doing that. So, I mean, there's just a lot of confusion. And I was asking the minister for some clarity here, and we just got more word salad, you know, in the legislature. And I think that's unfortunate because I think, it does show a level of disrespect. And then, you know, some of the medical officers of health, I don't blame them for making those calls. I mean, I think that they're making the calls they think are the right ones. But what's lacking here again is I think respect from the government, and clear communication and less chaos.
But Mr. Lecce, your colleague on the government side, the education minister, has he not been consistent in saying we think schools are safe? 99% of schools don't have a case. These kinds of things. Isn't that? That's always been the message from the government, Merritt Stiles.
Well, you know, they've said that, and then they've also said what we're going to put in enhanced safety measures. Where are they? They've said that they're going to increase asymptomatic testing. They were going to improve ventilation. They were going to decrease class size. We haven't seen any of that. They continue to throw these numbers around, but the reality we're seeing on the ground in some regions more than others, certainly, has not been consistent with what he's saying. And I would say, you know, at the same time that he's talking about keeping schools open, and believe me, I am an advocate of keeping schools safely open.
Okay.
But at the same time, he's off there talking to the federal government and chastising the federal government to get, you know, more vaccines to keep schools safe. I think that at the end of the day, the government has been hiding behind a lot of their rhetoric, and we see the impact in the confusion and the chaos in our schools.
I had Dr. Vera Etches on my program this morning. I'm going to play a clip. I just wonder if the school setting, the classroom is really as dangerous as some are making it out to be, as the teachers' unions, for example, are making it out to be, and whether a lot of fear is being whipped up needlessly and maybe even irresponsibly. Mm-hmm. So I put this to the experts, Merritt Stiles. It's mm-hmm. you know, I want to know what the experts think, and this is the top doctor, the top public health official mm-hmm. in our city, and this is mm-hmm. what she said this morning.
Children are more likely to get COVID in the community than in the schools, and the same for teachers. The community transmission is what is driving COVID levels up, and it's what's introducing COVID into schools. So the schools are not the place where children are typically picking up COVID.
Classrooms are not a driver of transmission. Is that what you're saying?
That's correct. You know, of all the people that test positive when we send the cohort home, usually we do not see transmission within that cohort. And we've studied that for variants of concern as well. We've asked everyone to be tested when they've gone home and there's a variant of concern at play. And we did not find that there was greater transmission in those situations.
Okay. Classrooms are not a driver of transmission. That's the public health officer here in Ottawa. How do you respond to that?
Well, I think that in some jurisdictions, it's managed better than others. In regions like where I live, in the greater Toronto area, we have a different thing happening here. And certainly some of the public health officials here feel a little bit differently about how that spread is happening. But again, you know, to me, the issue is simply, as these things peak, and we are seeing more transmission in schools than we have been, we are certainly seeing some public health units are starting, like in Niagara region, have decided to just go around the government and start vaccinating education workers in this period now, as we're about to head into April break. They're seeing an opportunity here to get that work done. And I think that would do a lot. I mean, at the rate we're going now, education workers, teachers and others are not going to be vaccinated until after June. And that seems like a missed opportunity. If we want to make sure that they are safe, that they're protected, that our schools remain safely open, what we're hearing from the experts is that we really need to be focusing on, increasing and certainly prioritizing the vaccination of those workers. There's things we can be doing like that right now that would make a huge difference.
Okay.
You know, should schools close? I mean, again, every region is handling it differently, but I do think that the provincial government has not been helpful in their very confusing messaging around this.
So there's a technical briefing happening right now for the media with some people responsible for kind of the on-the-ground mechanics of the vaccination distribution program from the provincial government. When it comes to your file, education, what would you like to hear coming out of that? How could the vaccination distribution plan better serve people working and attending school in Ontario?
Well, first of all, I just want to say, you know, we got to do everything we can right now to get as many needles in arms. There's no question. And I think the government has clearly kind of bungled this, but we can fix it. We can do better. And we should be doing it 24/7. In terms of education workers, I think there's a lot of evidence. It's pretty clear now that we should be prioritizing those workers, and we have an opportunity to do it. One of the things that I know has been proposed by some boards, some experts, is actually doing it in the schools during April break, vaccinating education workers that way and ramping it up. You know, there's we've seen other countries do this better, clearly other provinces too. We are lagging way behind. And if we want to make sure that our schools remain safe places for our students and that we limit the transmission in schools and throughout the community, it may take efforts like that. So I hope that we'll be hearing something like that today. And I also hope we'll be hearing, not necessarily specifically on vaccination, but I want to hear this government move to provide paid sick days, which across all sectors is a key factor in how we're going to fight COVID-19.
Thank you for your time, Merritt Stiles.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much. Okay. Stay well.
Yeah, you too. Merritt Stiles, New Democrat, Davenport's the riding, education critic for the official opposition. The Prime Minister speaking right now. This is the Right Honorable Justin Trudeau.
This is the time to do everything we can together to get as many people vaccinated as soon as possible. From day one, beating COVID-19 has been a Team Canada effort. Last summer, we delivered $19 billion through the Safe Restart Agreement to support the provinces and territories on what Canadians needed to get through this crisis. That money has helped with everything from additional staff at seniors' homes in Alberta to modeling in BC to help keep communities safe to mobile testing in Nova Scotia to reach rural areas. Today, we're delivering on the final installment for that Safe Restart Agreement. Our priority is for funding to go where it's needed most, whether it's for patients in hospitals, PPE for essential workers, or COVID-19 testing and screening for people on the front lines. Tout comme le premier versement.
Just like the first investment, the $700 million investment announced today.
So while the, Prime Minister repeats his opening remarks in French, we will stop here, and then hopefully when we come back, the Prime Minister will be taking some questions from reporters in the press gallery. This is the Rob Snow Show, Rogers TV, and City News.
Firm.
Fair.
Fun.
The Rob Snow Show returns
on Rogers TV and City News, 101.1 FM
and 1310 AM.
So we're going to go back to this news conference in just a second. Dr. Tam speaking now. Did you watch any of the baseball game yesterday? The Toronto Blue Jays, they moved on. They're playing a series with the Texas Rangers. Now Texas is wide open. No restrictions.
I just saw the pictures on social media, but it's quite a sight.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's the front page of the Globe and Mail this morning is a big color picture of that. It's a strange sight. I watched a little bit of that Jays game yesterday. Big, nice win by the Jays. They're playing really good baseball. But pretty much sold out. Looked to be just about sold out. Capacity in that ballpark's like 41,000. Looked pretty sold out. Masks were supposed to be mandatory unless you were drinking or eating. But honestly, that's what I was most interested in, was actually scanning the crowd, looking at masks. I didn't see a lot of mask wearing going on. But then I was looking, you know, David, I pay attention all the time to this Bloomberg vaccine tracker. And they have a lot of data on every individual U.S. state and how it is progressing with its vaccination program. So Texas has a population of about 29 million people, and it will have achieved herd immunity, which according to Dr. Fauci is 75% of the population fully immunized. According to Bloomberg, Texas will achieve that 3 months from now.
Three months from now. Midsummer.
Will have achieved herd immunity.
Before I've even had a first shot.
Yeah. Great. It's quite likely I won't have a first shot, you won't have a first shot. And 90-year-olds will just be starting to get their second shot.
Yeah.
And in Texas, anyone over the age of 18 can be vaccinated today. Today.
Starting today.
Yeah, you can go to the CVS, Walgreens, and be vaccinated today in Texas. And this afternoon, a quarter to four, Joe Biden is going to announce that that is going to be the policy in the United States, in every state, all 50 states, as of April 19th.
That's the kicker for me. Right. 2 weeks from now, 2.5 weeks.
13 days from now.
13 days. Yeah.
I talked to my father in Nova Scotia on the weekend. He is 73. And what are people my age asking their parents when they talk to their parents? Hey, have you been vaccinated? Do you have an appointment for a vaccine yet? The Nova Scotia government, nobody from the local health authority or anything, they don't even have appointments yet. Texas is doing 276,000 doses a day. They are doing more doses a day in Texas than we are doing in Canada. On a daily basis, we're doing about 163,000 a day in Canada now. See, Doug Ford says we can do 150,000 just in Ontario. We're doing 163,000 across the country. on a daily basis. 28% of Texans have had at least one dose. And it's 15% here have had one dose. It's 28% in Texas. It's 15% in Canada. 16% of Texans have had two doses. So, and it's not even 3% in Canada. It's like 2.8% as of this morning. Okay. So more people in Texas have received two doses than Canadians have received one dose.
Great.
You know what I mean?
Great.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a good start.
In total, Texas has done, just in raw numbers, 13 million doses have been administered in Texas. In Canada, it's 6.5 million for the entire country, right? Big. It's a big state, 29 million people. But we have 38 million people. They've done almost twice as many doses as we have. One state. So, you know, I hear a lot of people looking down on the fact that you know, the game was wide open and it was close to sold out. And, oh, my God, how stupid are they in Texas, right? And, okay, fair enough. Okay. You can wonder, hey, are they crazy in Texas, in the Lone Star State? Maybe they are crazy. Or maybe we should look in the mirror and wonder, if they're so stupid in Texas, then what does that say about the people running the vaccine operation in this country? If they can deliver those kinds of results and they're stupid, how is it they've managed these superior results compared to all the superior people running our superior program here in Canada? They had a sold-out ball game yesterday. And we've spent the morning talking about going into another lockdown. Uh, 11:52. Let's join this news conference here.
Response prioritizes interventions that will support good health and safe recovery. Building in actions to address inequities in our response makes us stronger and more united. I know that we are all tired and looking for a break, but now is not the time to let down our guard. Please continue to follow local public health recommendations. Stick to the safer habits we've learned and get a vaccine when it is your turn. The bottom line is, no one is protected until everyone is protected. Thank you.
Afternoon. We'll now turn to questions from media. We'll start on the phone. One question, one follow-up. Operator.
Thank you. Merci. Please do not hesitate to press star 1 on your device's keypad. N'hésitez pas à faire étoile 1 sur votre appareil. Première question, Marie-Vastel Ledevoir.
Question, Marie-Vastel Ledevoir. Good morning. Can you hear me? I am getting an echo.
You think we would have
My
figured this out by now?
My question is for you, Mr. Trudeau. Maybe Minister Haidu may want to add. I would like to know what you have arrived at when it comes to the vaccine passport. In the United States, the CDC has changed its regulations recently for travel, saying that people who have not been completely vaccinated will still be at risk. There's lots of problems at the borders. We have family members who've been separated, and also businesses. So do you intend to relax the rules for those who are completely vaccinated, particularly for the United States, so that maybe vaccines should proceed quickly at the border? Answer. Thank you very much for your question. Many people are thinking of what they can do this summer, thinking about trips and family visits, but we are not yet there. We are still in the middle of a very serious third wave. People must be very careful in the upcoming weeks. for us to flatten the curve. That is the main priority. Of course, we all hope to be able to reopen the borders so we can start traveling in the coming months. We shall continue working with our partners in the United States and elsewhere in the world to make sure that that is done the right way. We have already seen the importance of vaccines for international travel before the pandemic. It's going to be important, but when it comes to the details of what we've done, we are still working on them. But of course, as you said, it's not right away. We are going through a third wave, and we must continue hanging in there for a few more weeks so that we can really flatten the curve and allow that the vaccines that will arrive in millions in the coming weeks have an effect. Patty.
Well, thank you very much. And the Prime Minister is absolutely right. Now is not the time for Canadians to be thinking about traveling as we worked so hard to flatten the curve. And we, you know, thank the many, many Canadians who are sacrificing in ways that we see, in ways that we don't see. I'll just say that on the topic of vaccine passports for international travel, of course, we remain committed to having those conversations with our international partners, because however that conversation evolves, we want to make sure that Canadians have the right kinds of documentation for future travel.
Ms. Vivian-Marie?
Oui, merci.
Thank you. I understand that it's not something that will be done tomorrow, but in other countries, progress has been made with vaccines. It's not really time for Canadians to travel, but some people have received two doses of the vaccine elsewhere and may want to come back here for business reasons or for personal reasons. Are you making progress on that front? Are rules going to be relaxed for people who want to come here if they are completely vaccinated? What do you intend to do with people who were vaccinated with a vaccine not approved in Canada? If people receive, for example, the Chinese or Russian vaccine elsewhere, these vaccines are not recognized in Canada, will that be accepted as proof of vaccination when they come here? Answer, that's a very good question. The reality is we will rely on evidence at every stage. We will continue looking at studies. We will continue working together with our partners like the United States, who may take some measures before us, but we will make sure.
So we're going to leave this. The Prime Minister is taking questions right now. Our parliamentary correspondent here at City News is Cormac McSweeney, and he'll be filing all the latest breaking news and developments on the federal scene. We also have people at Queen's Park. Right now, there's a technical briefing happening from the Ford government. I mean, literally right now. Reporters are learning more details about what the province is doing on its side of the vaccination rollout. So it's going to be a busy, busy news afternoon. Mark Sutcliffe coming up after the noon news. We're back tomorrow after the 9 o'clock news on City News.
Rob Snow Show.
Weekdays at 9 on Rogers TV and City News.
101.1 FM and 1310 AM.
Number one for local news in Ottawa and the Valley.